This is the Inland Journal from Spokane Public Radio. I'm Doug Nadvornik. We're about 5 weeks out from the general election, and we're introducing you to candidates at the Spokane County, Washington, and Idaho state levels. Today, we focus on three Spokane legislative races in the 3rd and 6th districts. We start in the 6th, which covers much of South, West, and North Spokane. The incumbent Senator Michael Baumgartner is vacating his seat to run for Spokane County Treasurer, and that set up a state Senate race that features a Spokane State Representative and a health care advocate. Republican Representative Jeff Holy is 6 years into his legislative career in the State House, just long enough, he says, to finally get the hang of things in Olympia. And just as he achieves that, he decides to give up his seat and make a run at the state Senate.
Tongue-in-cheek, I guess I'm sort of graduating from the junior varsity to the varsity and trying to increase my efficiency and the leverage I have in Olympia.
Holy is a former Spokane police detective, a lawyer, and a self-described pragmatic politician who says he's more interested in solving problems than in upholding ideology. He says his time in Olympia, 6 regular sessions and several special sessions, has helped him to understand the big picture of state government.
The big picture is trying to focus on the priorities of government and help the people of Washington State be successful in their personal lives, their business lives, their investment lives, their social lives, to make sure that the laws are fair and just, you know, and apply to everybody equally, that they don't hurt anybody, to avoid unintended conflicts, complications, consequences of legislation we propose, and to run interference with the multitude of state agencies out there on behalf of citizens here.
In 2018, Holy was one of the main sponsors of a new law that eases some of the financial burdens for formerly incarcerated people. It lowers some of their court fees and eliminates the interest they pay on some of their debt. His years in the legal system helped him to understand and work that bill.
The problem is that the depth of knowledge we have in any topic outside of our area's expertise or the skill sets we bring, which sometimes are, you know, are endless, you know, in depth from life experiences and education, this kind of thing, are about 6 inches deep and about 2 miles wide. That makes us dangerous.
Jeff Holy's Democratic challenger is Jessa Lewis. She's the Eastern Washington Director of Health Care for All. That's an organization devoted to increasing access to health care.
Talk to folks on the doors, and if you were to talk to every single person between Democrat, Republican, Independent, Libertarian, you name it, of the people who will answer you on the doors and give you what their number one concern is, it's health care. It is something that transcends class, political ideology, you name it, because our system is so broken.
Lewis advocates for a solution that's the norm in many westernized nations.
We had a bill in the House and the State Senate to pass a universal single-payer trust for the state of Washington, so that would cover everyone who is not currently covered by a federal health care plan, such as Medicare or TRICARE. And we were literally 6 votes shy in both chambers of getting it done. And I'm honestly running to complete the job.
Lewis says fixing health care is just one piece of what should be done to improve the well-being of children and adults in the state.
When you don't have proper insurance or proper housing, it is hard for kids to perform well in school. We have a situation where we have first-generation students and other students living in their car at Eastern Washington University because they can't afford housing. We have a growing number of homeless kids in our public schools across the state. And when you don't have that stability early on in your life, that sets it up to where you're going to be more dependent on public services later.
Jessa Lewis and Jeff Holy are the two candidates running for an open seat in Washington's 6th Legislative District. Holy won about 52% of the vote in the primary. As of this week, he reported about $133,000 in campaign contributions. Jessa Lewis reported $94,000 plus almost $15,000 in in-kind contributions, much of that from the Senate Democratic campaign. And now to the State House in the 6th Legislative District, where Republican Representative Mike Volz is running for a second term in Olympia. His day job is as Chief Deputy Treasurer in Spokane County. Even though he's a financial professional, he says education was the reason he first ran.
My wife's a teacher. My dad's dad was a teacher, and he was a union rep for public school employees. My mom was a teacher.
And so he was surrounded by education talk while growing up.
the education process, the testing, all the changes that were going on, McCleary unresolved. So that was kind of a big issue that compelled me to run, I think, between kind of a commitment to public education and a strong finance background.
During his first term, Volz served on the Education and Appropriations Committees. That was during the debate about how to answer the state Supreme Court requirement that the state spend more for public education. Ultimately, the legislature agreed to raise state property taxes to increase its share of public school spending while lowering local school property taxes.
And I tell people, is it the best solution that we could have come up with? The answer is no, but it's the best solution that we could come up with that would meet the requirement of the Supreme Court, which I think is an unfortunate situation to be in.
With the major education crisis taken care of, Volz says he now has two other main priorities. One is helping the legislature to change state law so that legislators aren't exempted from the state public records requirements that other governments must follow. Volz says he's serving on a small committee that's working on that issue.
I've lived under the public records law in the treasurer's office and STA for 20 years now. It's a different environment in there, and there's some different challenges in there. But we need to get a fix. We have a good vehicle. There is some whistleblower stuff. There is some sensitive stuff. You know, we get emails from victims of all sorts of crimes and stuff, and should that really be pumped out to the headlines? I think most people would probably agree that there should be some sensitivity to these folks that were victims or in horrible situations.
Volz's other priority is in the arena of mental health, public safety, and drug overdoses. He believes the best solution is to strengthen local institutions.
I think there's a role for the big, you know, Eastern State, Western State hospitals that can't be met in any other setting. But I think it's a partnership approach, and it really starts with these kind of community-based, whether it's government or nonprofits that are in the community. They know their clients way better than we ever will in Olympia. They know who should be there, who shouldn't be there. They know their names, they know their addresses, and so I think that's where the focus ought to be: is getting resources to these folks on the front lines dealing with this.
Mike Volz's opponent is Democrat Kay Murano. Murano has been the executive director of the Spokane Low-Income Housing Consortium for 3 years. She says she talks with a variety of groups about the need for more low-income housing and issues related to that.
I provide education, and some of that is to developers to say, here's some funding sources that you might not be aware of, or some other ways that, you know, you can look at what zoning we have, and is that going to work with what you're trying to build, especially when we have changes that are coming through. So changes in legislation, changes in city ordinances.
Murano interacts with lawmakers at different government levels. She was active during the discussions during the last legislative session about putting more money into the state's housing trust fund.
And I thought it was going really, really well, especially talking to the state legislators about why we need more funding in the Housing Trust Fund, which is part of the capital budget.
She says leaders from both parties were on board with a proposal to add about $70 million to the fund. She says Spokane area legislators wrote letters making those requests.
And I thought, yes, this is perfect. I've done my job. But that capital budget was never passed. It never came to the floor for a vote because it was held hostage over the water rights bill.
More state money for housing projects had to wait.
So for the first time in the state history, we didn't get a capital budget. And I thought, you can't do that. You're lawmakers. You have two things to do. You pass laws and you write budgets. How do you not do half your job and stay employed? So I was complaining to my family, and they said, so what are you going to do about it? And I went, yeah, I can take action. I don't have to sit back and just try to educate and then let someone else take over. I can step up and run.
So she has. In addition to housing, Kay Murano says she's also interested in looking more closely at education spending and improving access to health care.
I would love to see some kind of universal health care come through at the federal level. That would obviously be the best choice. Not something I can do as a state legislator, but, you know, I can certainly encourage them to say, please go that direction. If they can't, however, bills have been in place through the federal government that say states can look at doing that within their own state borders. And as a legislator, that's something I would certainly want to pursue. Could we do some kind of universal health care within the state of Washington, similar to what Canada First did, because they actually are provincial? It's not a nationwide program.
Murano suggests a system that's similar to what the Veterans Administration operates. Mike Volz won the August primary for that state House seat by about a half percentage point after trailing on election night. So far, Kay Murano is outspending him. She has raised nearly $88,000 for her campaign. Volz has raised about $50,000. You're listening to Inland Journal. We go now to Spokane's 3rd Legislative District, where longtime state legislator Tim Ormsby faces a challenge from South Spokane neighborhood leader Dave Lucas. Dave Lucas is a retired Marine. He served in Iraq and Afghanistan. He retired as a lieutenant colonel. In 2013, he and his family moved to Spokane.
In the Marine Corps, when you move somewhere, as soon as you pull in and the moving trucks start unloading, the neighbors just descend on you with welcoming, gifts, points of contact, suggestions. Well, when I moved in the neighborhood, we didn't really have that.
And he missed it. So he and others in the Rockwood neighborhood created their own tradition for new neighbors.
And we put together a welcome bag. And what's great about that is it's been so successful that some of the other neighborhoods are now taking that on as a neighborhood program.
Now Lucas spends much of his time doing community work. He's the chairman of the Rockwood Neighborhood Council. Leaders there advocated for police officers to be hired this year, and they also supported a bill in Olympia that would have allowed for supervision of people convicted of certain property crimes.
Economically, it may not even make sense to put them in jail, but how do you necessarily give them or work with providing the tools so they can get out of that kind of cycle of crime? And so this supervision bill would have helped provide, you know, supervision officers who could work on that. And those that are willing to work could basically have somebody to help guide and mentor.
The bill was sponsored by 3rd District Democratic Senator Andy Billig, Tim Ormsby's seatmate. The Senate approved it and sent it to the House, where it died. Lucas says he and his neighbors were angered by that and wondered about Ormsby's role in it. Lucas says he became concerned about Ormsby's priorities after hearing him speak earlier this summer at a 3rd District town hall meeting.
Really, the things that he was talking about was that he worked on the budget and had these new tax proposals that he was advocating on behalf. And I'm like, this isn't going to help Spokane. We had an opportunity to work on the property crime bill. You stopped it.
For his part, Ormsby disputes Lucas's assertion that he may have been responsible for shelving the crime supervision bill. He says he was its co-sponsor in the House.
It was specifically focused on individuals that had been convicted of auto theft, and the model is a good model.
He says the bill would have created pilot programs to test supervision of offenders in Spokane and Federal Way. When the bill was introduced in the House, he says legislators raised constitutional questions about it, particularly about limiting the benefits of the programs to the two cities.
So you couldn't do a pilot project?
Legal scholars will debate. That's why we have courts. But in this case, this was the court of public opinion, and this is the court of public policy. And when those questions were raised about equal treatment across the board, the policy committee, the public safety committee, said, well, then let's make this policy universal. It happened at the 11th hour. There was no room in the budget to expand it. It wasn't going to pass as a pilot project. It needed to be statewide.
And so the bill died. Ormsby hopes it can be brought back next year. Ormsby has served 15 years in the State House and holds one of its most important positions, chairman of the Appropriations Committee, which writes his chamber's budget.
My focus has been for individuals that, for quality of life purposes, for removing obstacles to success, that we provide a leg up in terms of the state programs and services, trying to remove those obstacles and create quality of life for our residents here in the 3rd. And that can get translated into the state budget in a wide variety of ways.
Tim Ormsby has raised more than $91,000 for his campaign as of this week. Dave Lucas has raised more than $45,000. Ormsby won 64% of the vote in the August primary. You can read or hear our stories and our full interviews with all the candidates on our website at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Click on the Regional News tab and then on the 2018 election link. Washington and Oregon are among a minority of states that do not have laws in the books that require safe storage of firearms. But that could soon change in Washington. This November, voters will decide Initiative 1639. It's a sweeping gun control measure. Olympia correspondent Austin Jenkins spoke with a crime victim and a grieving grandmother who are on opposite sides of this initiative.
At the Tacoma Rifle and Revolver Club, Jane Milhans helps one of her students prepare to shoot a paper target.
Remember, you want to get your point of aim.
Milhans is an NRA-certified instructor who specializes in teaching women to use firearms.
Now, that muzzle needs to be level, okay?
Milhans' passion for teaching women comes from personal experience. A decade ago, she interrupted a burglary at her home.
And they had armfuls of stuff from my house. And were trying to get out the back door when I walked in on them.
For Milhans, a pistol by the bed or in the purse is a way women can protect themselves. That's one reason why she's working to defeat Initiative 1639. Much of the initiative focuses on restricting access to semi-automatic rifles, including AR-15s. But it's another provision in the 30-page initiative that Milhans finds especially troubling. The requirement that gun owners securely store their firearms.
When someone breaks into your house, you have seconds.
Milhans says it's not always feasible to keep a gun under lock and key. She and other opponents of I-1639 say it amounts to criminalizing self-defense. Under the initiative, if a gun isn't safely stored and ends up in the wrong hands and someone is injured or killed, the gun's owner can face felony charges. For example, if a kid picks up an unsecured gun and accidentally shoots another child.
Parents do and should teach their kids firearms, but making them a felon, I don't agree with punishing them twice.
100 miles away in Kelso, Washington.
This is the last picture we have of him before he died.
Carla Tolley stands in a hallway of her home looking at a memorial of her 13-year-old grandson, Edgar Vasquez. A year ago this month, he was shot and killed by a friend. They were at the friend's grandfather's house, and there was a loaded shotgun that wasn't locked up.
I was shocked. It was the furthest thing from my mind that one of my grandchildren would be killed by a friend with an unsecured firearm.
The boy who shot her grandson was convicted of manslaughter, but the grandfather who owned the shotgun wasn't charged. Tolley notes that more than half the states have some sort of safe storage law. Now, she's advocating for passage of I-1639 in Washington.
If this gun would have been safely stored, Edgar would be alive.
And she firmly believes gun owners who don't safely store their guns should be held criminally liable if something bad happens.
I support anyone's right to own a firearm. But with that right comes responsibility.
Tolley says she thinks of her grandson every day and is working to pass I-1639 in his memory.
I don't want others to experience what we've been through.
Back at the Tacoma Rifle and Revolver Club.
All right, let's talk about home safety and storage.
Jane Milhans teaches her students about trigger locks, gun safes, and other options for securing their firearms. In fact, most of this NRA training is about safety, but she doesn't want the state or voters mandating a one-size-fits-all requirement.
A lot of women I teach are elderly, widows, and they may want to keep that firearm where they could grab it quickly.
While opponents of I-1639 argue the safe storage provision could cost precious seconds in a life-or-death situation, proponents insist it will save innocent lives. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
Spokane Public Radio is now in its fall 2018 pledge drive. We're asking you, if you enjoy this and other programs you hear on our stations, to consider becoming a member. Call 800-328-5729 or pledge online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. During the drive, I like to look back on what we've done in Inland Journal since our last round of fundraising. I'm the CEO of the show, and this is my report to the shareholders. We spent a lot of time during the last 6 months talking with candidates and about ballot measures. In May, we heard from the statewide candidates running for office in Idaho before the Gem States primary. In July and August, we interviewed nearly 40 candidates on the ballot in Washington's primary.
every couple of weeks, a couple, two or three of us will get together. We have that aha moment. We look at each other and say, seriously, we're running the state?
The last few weeks, we've been revisiting some of the local and legislative races important to Spokane leading up to the November election. We've covered the robust community debate in Newport surrounding a proposed silicon smelter. We've reported on how something called good neighbor authority, exercised by the Forest Service, is allowing the feds and states to work on projects that reduce wildfire risk and restore forests in Washington and Idaho.
There is up to 20 projects in the chute that we're talking about conceptually going forward. Not all of them are timber sales. A lot of them are forest restoration projects, wildlife habitat, soil surveys.
We went to the firehouse at Sachin Lake one day to watch people practice how to use bear spray.
Bear spray is by far and away the best tool that you can carry out into bear country with you. It's proven to be more effective than any sort of lethal control of bears when you're in a bear encounter situation, and it keeps the bears alive.
All right. One, two, three.
All right.
Good job. Make sure you put the cap on.
We've looked into legal financial obligations. Those are fees that are imposed on people convicted of crimes and sometimes keep them mired in a lifetime's worth of debt.
I can't buy a house. I can't buy a car. You know, I have an old minivan that I was able to scrimp and save $900 to buy, but I can't go get a financed vehicle.
We've convened panel discussions on suicide and our declining level of civic discourse. We've explored the growth of medical education in Spokane and the state of Idaho. And we've met with newly retired WSU environmental health researcher Phil Butterfield about his and his wife Patricia's new passion, winemaking.
I'm an engineer, you know. I'm not totally Dilbert, but I am an engineer. And so there was some discussion whether I could ever be a person at the tasting room. But now I do the tasting room quite readily and easily, and seem to do just fine.
We devoted much of one program to people in our region who are saving old historic varieties of apples.
I'm trying to build this grassroots movement to fill this valley with trees again. All this marginal land, again, we don't need to compete with the valley farmers, but we want to grow tree crops again. Nuts, the things that I know for sure rock solid, apples, I'm finding 100, 120-year-old apples.
I think for me, this is kind of like an apple museum. That's the way I look at our farm. I'm wanting to share that history with the community.
This year, Public Radio News Directors Incorporated, an organization of local public radio stations, gave an award to Inland Journal as one of the best local public affairs programs in the nation. It's not the first time this program has won that award. If you appreciate regional news, hearing the voices of your neighbors and elected officials, we ask that you make a pledge to help us continue our work, maybe even add a body or two to our staff so that we can do more to serve the community. Please make your call to 1-800-328-5729 or pledge online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thank you.